forgiving other people can be really difficult, but it can also be very healing too. For a lot of us, there's a peace of mind that comes from forgiving someone or being forgiven for something. And there's a growing body of evidence that shows it can have direct benefits to our mental health and well-being. Our guest today pioneered this research as the first person to publish a scientific study on person-to-person forgiveness in 1989, and he remains at the forefront of the field. We want to hear your experiences with forgiveness at 800-642-1234. What big moments of forgiveness stick out to you in your life? Have you ever had to forgive someone for something they did wrong? What was that process like? Did you notice yourself feeling better afterward? And what does forgiveness really look like to you? Is it just letting someone know that you've forgiven them, or is there a little bit more to it than that? Tell us your story. Give us a call at 800-642-1234, and that's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Robert Enright holds the Aristotelian Professorship in Forgiveness Science within the Department of Educational Psychology at UW-Madison. He's a licensed psychologist and co-founder of the International Forgiveness Institute. Bob, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Dean. It's an honor to be with you.
Well, I think we all kind of understand the general concept of forgiveness, but I'm curious, as someone who has studied this for so long, is there a precise way to define it in your work?
Yes. Just like justice or patience or kindness, historically it's considered to be what we call a moral virtue or goodness toward others. And specifically, forgiveness is toward those who have been unfair to us, sometimes deeply unjust to us. And we try to do two things: to try and get rid of the animosity or the built-up anger, which can really do a number on us as the one who's been hurt, and here's where it gets controversial, deliberately offering goodness to the one who was not good to us.
And earlier this week, you spoke at an international conference here in Madison about agape love and forgiveness. Can you talk about what this concept of agape love is and how it plays into forgiveness?
Yeah, well, agape, A-G-A-P-E, is an ancient Greek term. Of course, they still use it in Greece, but it started in ancient Greece trying to distinguish different kinds of love. And there's a love like Philadelphia. It's called philia, which is mutual friendship love. But agape has come historically to be known as the kind of love that's much harder than mutuality, where you can give to others who need help, give to others when it's hard, when it's painful, and you do it anyway for the other person's sake. And that actually is seen by many people as the absolute highest form of forgiveness, but that doesn't mean if someone looks at that and says, that's ridiculous, I couldn't possibly feel and experience and give that kind of love to someone who brutalized me, I would say, of course, because we're talking a difference between where you are right now on your path of forgiving and what the highest possibility is. And we don't want to get discouraged if we're not at the highest, especially if we haven't practiced forgiveness that much in our life.
So there's acknowledging forgiveness, and then there's, as you said, doing good for that person who might have wronged us. And that does seem like the tough part. On a practical level, what does that look like? Is it kind of sending just good vibes internally, or are there acts of service? What does it look like?
Well, it all depends on the situation. Let's say we're talking with a person who's in a partnering relationship, and the other partner is very, very abusive. For us to then, who study forgiveness and use it in psychotherapy, I'm a licensed psychologist, so forgiveness is actually part of therapy, we would never say, well, to be so good, you want to go back into that relationship. Because that's not forgiveness, that's reconciliation. And reconciliation, not being a moral virtue, means you don't have to reconcile when you forgive. So being good in a situation like that might be this. You might have a kind word about the person to others. You might donate a little money to a charity in that person's name. And here's the paradox of forgiveness that many people don't understand. The paradox, of course, being an apparent contradiction, but it's not a contradiction. As you try, even for a little bit of goodness toward that other person, the built-up resentment in your own heart starts to melt away. And so you're no longer a victim of emotional abuse that you literally could carry with you for the rest of your life. And so while it seems outrageous to say, well, to be good to someone who isn't good to me, well, you're not necessarily going to reconcile. You're not abandoning justice. You can still call 911, okay? And you're definitely not excusing what the other did, because what the other did was, is, and always will be unfair. But the heroic nature of forgiveness is you try even a little bit to be good toward that other person. And we find through our science that a lot of psychological well-being visits the one who is ready and willing and chooses to forgive without being forced into it.
Yeah, when we reach that point of forgiveness, not necessarily excusing something, but when we do forgive, what are some of those trickle-down effects that you see on our well-being in general?
Well, what we tend to do, we do randomized clinical trials where we randomize people. For example, Suzanne Friedman, who's now a professor at the University of Northern Iowa, who was at our conference, by the way, these last 2 days here in Madison, and I did a study way back when in the mid-1990s where we randomized incest survivors to a forgiveness condition or treatment as usual as they wanted to. And all of them, for the most part, said, no, I'm not going to forgive, but I'll be part of your study. They were being kind, but Suzanne in her gentleness said, come on in anyway. And so she went through a process of forgiveness with them, an hour a week, one-on-one for over a year. And at the end of that time, it kind of shocked the scientific world. The women who came to us all clinically depressed, which does make sense, right? Something as horrific as incest, went to non-depressed status. Those who did not have the forgiveness condition stayed clinically depressed. They then went through this program with Suzanne, and after a year, they went to non-depressed status, and the original group continued being non-depressed. And it was the strongest effect for incest ever recorded in the published literature. But that's just one example among many where people who've been brutalized by life, when they willingly choose to forgive, depression can go down, anxiety can go down, post-traumatic stress can go down, toxic anger can go down. And you know what goes up? Self-esteem. People actually start liking themselves more. And see, what we find, which is sad, is when people beat you down, a lot of people believe the lie and they start not liking themselves. And so when they forgive, they kind of stand up here and said, you know, I've just done something rather amazing, rather heroic. I was able, through my pain, to give a little goodness to this other. I'm a pretty good person. And their sense of hope for the future and self-esteem rise.
We're talking with Bob Enright right now, licensed psychologist, professor of educational psychology at UW-Madison, and a longtime scholar on forgiveness. We're also taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Let's go to the phones right now. We have Patrick with us in Madison. Hi, Patrick.
Hello. I'd like to share the story. I had two parents that were very brilliant, but alcoholics and very abusive to each other. And the environment we grew up in for years was very terrifying and humiliating. And I carried around a lot of anger, a lot of grief, a lot of sadness, carried with it into my adulthood. So I went through a process as an adult where I had to forgive my parents. My mother died of an overdose on the due date of my first son, my first child. And I was very angry with her and very sad. And, you know, I learned that sadness was a cover-up for anger and anger was a cover-up for sadness. But I went through a process of forgiveness and, in fact, in part due to Professor Enright. And you know, the process is a lifetime process, actually. And but when I went through a very formal process of doing that, it was actually very freeing. And it was for me. It wasn't for them. It was a process that allowed me to see more happiness. You know, I had PTSD from growing up in such a terrifying environment. And, I became happier and her spouse. I actually wrote a book about it called The Luckiest Boy in the World, and was able to move forward. I mean, it's a very important process.
Well, Patrick, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that. That's quite an incredible story. And Bob, when we are faced with a situation like Patrick was talking about, I'm thinking, where do we start with something like that? You know, where do we start that process of forgiveness? What, you know, advice do you have? What have you seen that works as a starting point?
Yeah, the starting point is to first understand what path you're on. And we usually start with a definition, like you and I, Dean, just started, where you know you've been treated unjustly. The goal is to try and get rid of the resentment. And as Patrick showed you, he was miserable inside, trying to get rid of that through this offering of a little bit of goodness as best you can today toward that other person. And you may or may not reconcile, you won't excuse, you won't abandon fairness. Do you want to go on this journey? Many people say yes, some say no. But if the person says yes, then we give people a homework assignment, and it's this: try as best you can to do no harm to the one who hurt you. And that would include dragging their reputation through the mud, as an example. And see, we're not asking for some kind of goodness at first. We're saying refrain from the negative toward this person. And that itself can be rather curative. And when people begin that, then they can put on their backpack of forgiveness and start the journey. And I like what Patrick said. He said it's a lifelong journey. And it is a pathway. It's not like some kind of technique you do, and all of a sudden you do this technique for 10 minutes and you're done. It's more like a journey that you can keep on, and you keep perfecting in it, deepening in it, and your health improves.
We're talking about The Power of Forgiveness with Bob Enright, an emotional or educational psychology professor at UW-Madison and a licensed psychologist. We want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about forgiveness? Have you had to seek forgiveness from someone you've wronged? Have you received forgiveness? Have you forgiven others? Was it a tough process? What good has it done you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Dean Kinetter. We continue our talk with UW-Madison psychology professor Bob Enright. He's with us today to discuss the importance of forgiveness, a topic that he's studied for more than 30 years, forgiving ourselves, our communities, and more. We're also taking your calls at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go to the phones. We have Hollis with us in Verona. Hi, Hollis.
Hi. Yes, am I on?
You are, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay, yeah. I had a mutual friend of 40 years that I did work for, and we went to Acapulco, and I lent him on a second mortgage, you know, $50,000 that was supposed to be paid back in a month. He's an investor, and he never paid me back. So for 11 years, every month, I've been paying on that note that he never paid me back on, and he's living in Florida in a gated community, living the high life. So it's really hard to get over every month I go in. I'm trying to not be angry about it, but seems though I'm 67 and still working full-time, it's it makes me rather angry.
Wow, Hollis, thanks for calling in and sharing that experience. And Bob, some anger, some resentment can come when those problems are going to go unresolved. What advice would you have?
Well, that is a hugely serious problem, Hollis, obviously, $50,000. And here's the, kind of some of the next steps after you do no harm. What we do is then try to, as best we can, see who this other person is in a wider lens toward this person other than, in this case, stealing the money from you. And since you said this was a mutual friend, here would be some questions I would have for you. How has this person been hurt or misguided in his own life? What has made him stumble? Not to excuse. We're not excusing him. We're trying to see where he missed the boat somewhere with regard to this idea of justice, paying back what he owes. What happened to him so that he, in fact, has made this grave injustice? That's what we call the personal perspective. Then over time, we start seeing also, we go to what we call a global perspective, where we start asking this question, despite what he has done, does he have what we would call inherent or built-in worth as a human being? What do you see? Because you saw some friendship with him. What qualities does he have that go beyond the stealing of the $50,000? Not to excuse, but we want to see him as someone who has stolen. He's engaging in theft, but also someone who might have had a very difficult, confused life, and someone who also has a worth that we're not really focusing upon yet. And when we do that, when we do those two kind of exercises, that is part of a pathway, and it takes months to start seeing a person more widely than what that person did to us, that's when the anger starts loosening a bit and starts going down a bit. And that's when we start seeing that we're not actually going to be living with the effects of that theft the rest of our life. Do you see the difference between what he did and the effect of it? What he did, we can never go back. We can't ask the UW to make a time machine where we go back and change that, where you don't give them the loan. But what we're left with is the effect. And when we broaden our story about who the other person is, which is part of forgiveness, that's again part of the paradox of forgiveness. And we see that the anger goes down to some degree, or even some compassion for how he has not lived his life well. And that's when we ask someone to stand in the pain of what happened, which, Hollis, you're doing very well. You are already, from what I can tell, engaging in a process of forgiveness, because that's the next step of standing in the pain so you don't throw it back at that other person or displacing it onto others. And that's when, again, we see more healing coming in a person's life.
Hollis,
and that takes time.
Hollis, thanks for that call. We'll go next to Maria in Madison. Hi, Maria.
In a person's life, that takes time.
Oh, Maria, I think you may have your radio on. Can you hear us?
We'll go next to Maria in Madison.
I think, Maria, we have a little bit of a messy connection with you right now. Let's go next to Saul in Delavan. Hi, Saul.
Hi, and thanks for being able to listen to the program at the same time. I was thinking, and I know you two have mentioned not excusing, and I heard the word justice, but I think it's a bigger issue about what forgiveness is not, and that it's not a free pass, that it's not a thing that diminishes guilt. And in AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a thing in there I think of as the anti-resentment prayer, to pray for the people you resent to have all the things you want for yourself, which to me is almost identical to a Buddhist meditation called Metta, where you pray for everybody to be well, happy, and peaceful, including people you have difficulties with. And then there's
Gotcha. Saul, we just have about a minute or so left here. I want to get Bob back in on this. Bob, what did you think of what Saul had to say?
I think he gave us some wisdom here because he talked about Buddhism, AA, Dean, have been talking about ancient Greek philosophy and psychotherapy, and there's a thread that runs through all of these. So regardless of one's religious beliefs or non-religious beliefs, philosophical beliefs, humanism, whatever it is, materialism, realism, forgiveness is what it is across all of these. And Saul is right. We don't give up the idea of justice, but we, across all of these, forgiveness does seem to be the willing attempt to get rid of this resentment and offering goodness toward the other for the other's sake, and we're the one who benefits.
Well, Bob, thank you so much for your time today. Thanks for joining us.
It's been my honor. You take care, Dean.
You too. Robert Enright is a professor of educational psychology at UW-Madison. He's a licensed psychologist, co-founder of the International Forgiveness Institute. He's been studying forgiveness for over 30 years. He was with us today to share some of that research and the ways forgiveness can benefit all of us. Still time for you to share your experience with forgiveness. If you've forgiven someone, if it's taken time, tell us about the process. What made it click, and how have you felt afterwards? Has it been a positive experience? If you've sought forgiveness from someone, how have you gone about that? How's it worked? Let us know. You can email centraltime@wpr.org. That's centraltime@wpr.org.